The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
Have you guys had a chance to check out Spike's Car Radio? If not, you need to check it out and catch up on some of his awesome interviews. In the past few weeks, Spike has talked with Matt Damon and Christian Bale from Ford vs. Ferrari, Kim Coates and William Fichtner. So head over to Spike's feed and take a listen. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to Spike's Car Radio so you can get new episodes every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson.
Hey, Steve.
Hi.
How's it going?
Were we on the whole time? We may have been on the whole time.
Probably.
Who knows?
That's all right. No, we weren't. How you doing, man?
Doing good. How about you, Steve?
It is our week 14 preview. I'm doing great.
Excellent.
Out of order. Mm-hmm. You look good.
Thank you. You too.
Got our new shirts.
Yeah.
Proper Cloth. We'll be telling you guys
later
all about Proper Cloth in a little bit, but we're previewing the week 14 action. Ready to get into it?
Yeah. Let's go.
How's your knee from hooping it up today?
I think you're all right. I thought it would be sore. It's fine. It held up okay.
This guy already says you're the least Irish-sounding Irishman of all time.
Yeah. I sound like a guy from the Golf Channel now. You know, one of those people with the accents. It's like, where the hell's he from? He's just got a messed up accent.
Irish-American accent.
That's what I got now. It's getting less and less Irish by the day, more and more American. It's just a mess.
Good. Welcome to America. All right, here we go. We got a lot of games to get through. Week 14, Dallas Cowboys at the Chicago Bears. That's our Thursday night game. What are you looking for in this one?
Trubisky. Is he back? And by back, I mean, okay.
He's on a pretty good little run right now.
I think Zoltan, our Hungarian correspondent, pulled up a list of like top five QBs through the last 4 weeks, I think, of PFF grade. Trubisky's fifth.
Oh, nothing like a nice four-week sample.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, but
we called that about 3 or 4 weeks ago. We said he's going to creep back toward average.
Right. He has. And he's actually crept the other side of average. He's gone into decent right now.
Yeah, but he's got a similar grade as he had last year.
Yes. But ultimately, like, he's now playing at the kind of level overall where you can win games with Trubisky playing like this. Like, he's still not good.
Well, the Bears are going to need that because they've got a rough stretch.
Yeah.
Down the stretch here of games.
And so it's interesting because Dallas have a lot of good players on defense, but they've been completely unable to generate turnovers of any kind. They're just not playing as well as they should. You've got Trubisky, who's actually now playing better than probably he should. So that's a sort of fascinating, you know, matchup. Trubisky against a defense that should be significantly better than him, but isn't right now.
I bought into it.
Oh, yeah?
I'm the only one taking the Bears. And I know it's the Thursday night game, so some of you are previewing it. Some of you have already seen it.
You did, yeah.
Dak in Dallas. It's been an efficient passing game, but it's not really translating to wins right now in recent weeks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're taking Dallas? You think Dallas won the game that people already saw?
I do. Bears have got some injuries. Prince Amukamara, doubtful. Bobby Massey, Taylor Gabriel, Trevathan, all out.
I should have waited for the injury report.
Those are some problems. I think Dallas won. The end.
All right. I took the Bears. I hope it was a great game for you guys. All right. Let's get to the biggest games of the weekend, starting with an AFC Championship rematch. Kansas City Chiefs travel to New England to take on the Patriots.
Mm.
you know, so the Chiefs have four losses right now, and the Patriots offense, just not good compared to what we're used to seeing. Has this matchup lost a little luster?
No, I think it's still a really good matchup. I mean, if nothing else, you're dealing with two of the best coaches, the best coaches in the NFL. Plus, you've got, you know, Patrick Mahomes, spectacular. You got Tom Brady, still, you know, really fun to watch. This, I mean, no, it's still really good. Like, the Patriots, they're 10-2. People are talking about them like they're done, you know? Like, it's
annual.
Right.
This is an annual thing.
I think there is something to this idea of they're probably not as good as 10-2. Like, they've had a really nice schedule that's helping them out a ton. But they're still a good team. And, you know, the Chiefs haven't been the same team they were a year ago either. Like, Kansas City's offense is not humming the way it was. They're eighth right now in terms of PFF's ELO rankings, which is, you know, our version of all the data and grading rolled up to tell you how good a team actually is, not what they're producing.
It adjusts for schedule, it adjusts for where they're strong, all that stuff, right?
So they're eighth. Now, granted, you know, you've been missing Mahomes for some games, you've missed Tyreek Hill for some games, you've had Matt Moore in there, you've had a hobbled Patrick Mahomes some other games. So, you know, they're probably higher than that, but they're not as good as they were a season ago where they were basically unstoppable. The other thing that is fascinating to me about this is, people say this all the time, and I think most of the time it's probably not true, but I do think legitimately the Houston Texans showed people what you should be doing from a blueprint game plan standpoint to stop the offense of New England, right? Double Edelman, treat James White as a receiver, cover him with defensive backs, and just dare anybody else to win, ever. Now, Kansas City doesn't have a good defense, but that is essentially deploying your resources. You don't need to be good to achieve that game plan, right?
They've been better in recent weeks, though. And here's the thing. When they signed Steve Spagnuolo to be the defensive coordinator, but they didn't really add a ton of talent on the back end, my take at the time, at least, was, all right, you know, they're going to play less man-to-man. It's not going to be as talents-driven. It's going to be a little bit more scheme-driven, game plan-oriented, game plan-driven. We're sitting here, and they have the number 18 coverage grade in the NFL, the Chiefs. So there's been a little bit of an improvement there. Now, remember last year, they had the number one pass rush in like a bottom five coverage unit. The pass rush isn't the same, but ultimately, they're making life a little bit more difficult in the back end. Tyrann Mathieu had a really nice pick last week. Travarius Ward's done some nice things. So I think they've pieced it together a little bit on the back end that I think they might be able to give New England some trouble if it's a game plan oriented type of look.
But I think critically, that game plan doesn't actually require you to be that good to execute it.
To just take out Edelman and let.
Right. Because you're taking out Edelman with bodies, right? So none of the people doing it actually need to be, you know, top cover guys. What you're doing with James White is essentially just saying that, look, our cornerback has a better shot at covering him than our linebacker does. So even if our cornerback isn't particularly good, he's still a hell of a lot better than a linebacker trying to cover him.
Right.
And then you're just relying on not getting beat by guys that are struggling to win. So whether it's N'Keal Harry, whether it's Mohamed Sanu, whoever, like, they just don't have guys that are consistently winning outside of that. So I honestly think you don't need to have particularly strong personnel to execute this game plan and at least consistently force them to go to plans B and C.
Yeah, don't forget, last year the Patriots came out running the ball quite a bit, and, you know, they moved the ball really well in their first couple drives, the entire first quarter. After that, the narrative is that they just ran the ball down Kansas City's throat, and that's why they won. In the first quarter, that was the case. After that, Kansas City did a better job of stopping the run in the AFC Championship game. And then New England threw the ball a little bit better, and they ended up winning 37-31 in overtime. But I could see this being a game where at least the initial game plan is Kansas City's got the worst run defense grade in the league. This could be the game where they try to play a little bit more power football in New England to get that offense going. They did go a little bit more fullback driven last year at this time, run the ball. They don't have a fullback at this point, but they have to figure something out.
Right. Their fullback right now is Alana Roberts, the linebacker.
Right. And they've done a lot with Matt Lacoste on the field the last couple of days. They just don't have that dynamic tight end. But from a run game standpoint, you know, they might try to play heavy there. What about Mahomes and that passing attack against Belichick? I mean, that last year when Mahomes is in his MVP season, we said even in Mahomes' worst games, they still find a way to score 30. Mm-hmm. But they were, you know, shut out in the first half of the AFC Championship. And there was even points in the first matchup last year in New England, Sunday Night Football. just making Mahomes a little bit uncomfortable. Now, Mahomes also could have thrown for 8 touchdown passes in that first matchup. Remember, he missed a ton, but that was where some of the zero blitz stuff started. They were zero blitz and Mahomes just throwing off his timing just enough.
They were, and that was like he was inches from a couple of those plays. Like they almost had Tyreek Hill behind a zero blitz that would have just been curtains, touchdown immediately. Yeah, this offense is so interesting because it's not like they can't be stopped. And in fact, for great stretches of time, like the Raiders shut them out for 3 quarters. Like you can stop this team scoring for a long period of time. The problem is that it's very hard to do it for the entire game. And when they click, they can score like 28 and a quarter.
Right.
They just immediate scores back to back. But this is why this offense last year or this year reminds me so much of that like 98 Vikings team, right? Because you could slow them down and stop them scoring again for great periods. It's just that when they clicked, it was immediate touchdowns.
Like my Bryce Pop led Jaguars back in 98.
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of slowed him down in the first half, but before you know it, it's 50-10.
But it's like, oh, we've done a good job. We've held them a couple of times, and then, oops, there's Randy Moss for an 80-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
Damn.
Anytime I can get Bryce Pop named on the podcast and back-to-back pods. Yeah.
And this is the same thing with the Chiefs, right? It's like, we've done a good job. We've done a good job. Oops, Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, like Travis Kelce. Score, 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 done.
I thought that the game plan by Houston offensively was fantastic. I mean, for years, if you've looked at New England's team, it's like, all right, you know, Dante Hightower is versatile. He does some nice things. And Jamie Collins is athletic and all that stuff. But if you're going to attack somebody, probably attack those linebackers. Your boy Juwan Bentley's out there. He's built a little bit like Hightower. You could stretch those guys sideline to sideline. You saw Houston do that a lot with Duke Johnson out of the backfield. Don't forget last year, Tyreek Hill in the AFC Championship game legitimately double teamed about 13, 14 times. Like legit, just 2 guys, the same way Edelman was double teamed last week. Mm-hmm. If they do that again, it could become a running back game again. Because in that game, it was like there were some screen passes that were just wide open.
Right.
And there was some, you know, easy throws to the back. So the cat and mouse game between Andy Reid and Bill Belichick is always fascinating. And Andy Reid's one of the coaches that's had pretty consistent success. If you're just looking at putting points up against Belichick defenses, he's done a nice job with it, even with Alex Smith, the quarterback.
And the Chiefs are running out of running backs. So if it does become a running back game, it's basically LeSean McCoy and nobody else.
But running backs don't matter, so they'll just throw it to anybody.
Maybe they're actually running out of bodies.
Right.
They matter when you run out of them. They don't matter insofar as you can plug pretty much anybody in and have the same kind of production. But when you physically don't have anybody anymore, that's when they matter.
If you're looking for a historical look, Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator back in 07 when the Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I don't think he was there in 11, right? No, because he'd already had a head coaching job with the Rams.
St. Louis Rams, right?
But he was the one. Remember, we found the blueprint for beating Brady back then? All you have to do is get pressure 50% of the time with your front four.
So that's the thing, right? I think the difference between, like, those are the things where it's like, oh, there's the blueprint. It's like, yeah, sure. If you can pressure him half of his dropbacks,
right.
that will have a lot of success.
Being really good is not a strategy.
Right. That will have a lot of success. On the other hand, it's virtually impossible to replicate. So it's probably not a blueprint.
Like in basketball today, it was, you missed the game, but it was annoying.
Oh, yeah?
The dude on the other team just kept hitting shots.
Yeah.
Like there is no strategy. There's no strategy to that. Well, let me just keep chucking up threes and hitting them.
Yeah.
There's no strategy there.
Well, it's like there's no strategy for the rest of us against you in the post.
There's a strategy. Yeah,
you're 9 foot tall. You're going
to
win.
So what I've noticed, I'm kind of like when a team goes on the road and they have to like handle the crowd and the new atmosphere and all that stuff. When people start playing with me, they don't realize how big I am and everything. So I'll pick some passes and off and, oh, you missed it. I went coast to coast and dunked it.
Yeah.
Stole it from dude.
Did it look as bad as when you tried to go in and dunk it?
It was kind of slow motion. Game. And then I turned around and nobody was following me. I was like, oh, did somebody call a foul? What happened?
Yeah.
And they just all wanted to watch me dunk poorly.
It is a spectacle.
Anyway, enough about my basketball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But people get used to me after a while. Eric's figured out how to play me. Anyway, this is a great matchup. Both sides of the ball. If you're a New England Patriots fan, with all the talk about the offense, I said last week would be the week, right? There should be a stretch where they start to get it going, right? At Houston, home against Kansas City, and then at Cincinnati, where you might see signs of life. Last week was not the week. So this would be the week you want to see something good happen. And if you're a Patriots fan, where are you going with this one?
With the Patriots.
I am too.
I honestly think, though, that there's a very good chance this Chiefs team can win, given what we saw last week with the Patriots' struggles against Houston. I think Kansas City can replicate what happened. And again, and so the difference between
the blueprint of the 07 Super Bowl, i.e. just get pressure on them every snap, right? You can't replicate that. It's virtually impossible.
Right.
I think you can replicate what the Texans did last week, almost regardless of who you are, and have the same kind of effect, slow them down, cause problems. Remember, this Texans defense is not exactly amazing. I think the Chiefs can have the same game plan, really cause New England offense problems, at which point, like at that stage, if the Chiefs start putting up some points, I don't think the Patriots can match them.
And then it's on the Patriots to adjust, and they did a little bit last week, move Edelman around. I mean, we'll see, you know, cat and mouse game there as well. So a couple good schematic battles, I think, in that one. And then this should be a great game. San Francisco 49ers at the New Orleans Saints. Back-to-back, ridiculously tough games for the Niners traveling across the country.
Yeah.
And this early is, game, right?
I don't know.
I think it's an early game.
It's the one thing missing in my giant sheet.
I know you put Sunday Night Football. Right. I mean, I know which games.
I know when they were.
Are in prime time.
I don't know what.
I'm pretty sure it's an early game. So.
Sunday it is.
Yeah.
This is fascinating to me because the Saints have been dealing with some offensive line injuries. Strawn Armstead at left tackle.
1 o'clock game.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. They've had some injuries there, and now would be a bad time for them to still have injuries there because they're coming up against this 49ers defensive front that is nasty. Armstead was back at practice on Wednesday, may play. If he doesn't, like, that's going to be some problems because Nick Bosa is just wrecking people. Like if he puts Drew Brees under a tremendous amount of pressure, that's a huge swing in San Francisco's favor in this game.
Yeah, Nick Bosa's been fantastic. You know, we've Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner on the interior, and Armstead's moved around, played on the edge a little bit. We talked about him on the midweek pod. So, yeah, that's the big difference in this 49ers defense this year is their ability to pressure the quarterback, but also, you know, cover extremely well on the back end. Brees is that guy, though, outside of one game where it's tough to put your finger on why he got sacked five times against the Falcons, but almost always, I mean, we've seen him, you know, he played the Rams, Aaron Donald, a couple times last year. And they just do such a good job, whether it's play action to create space or the quick passing game to, just like Brady has done the same thing through the years, neutralize good pass rushers with the quick passing game. Brees is as good as it gets at doing the same thing.
Yes, they made the point on the Thanksgiving broadcast that Brees had told them that, he had to take it on himself to get the ball out of his hands faster. You know, the offensive line isn't there. They're dealing with injuries. It's on me, right? I'm not going to expect my backup left tackle to hold up. I have to get rid of the ball. And on Thanksgiving, he averaged 2.18 seconds per pass.
So fast.
It's a tenth of a second faster than anybody else that week, every single pass. Like two-thirds of his dropbacks essentially came out in under 2.5 seconds. He genuinely did take it upon himself. He got rid of the ball quicker than anybody else in the NFL. Quicker than you see almost any single week. He would need to do that again this week if Teron Armstead isn't back. And honestly, even if Teron Armstead is back, given all the injuries he's had this year, he hasn't played at that level yet. Plus, they're down Andres Pete, left guard. Like, he's probably going to need to do that again if the 49ers defense is going to bring their pass rush.
So the interesting thing to me here, we talked about in New England, you take out Julian Edelman, right? I mean, would you do the same thing with Michael Thomas? He lines up in the slot, just straight up bracket him. Because, you know, Brees has only completed 6 passes at 20 plus yards down the field.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect, you know, it's one of those things he's capable. But I would rather take my chances having him throw the ball down the field over and over and over again. And there are a few games over the last couple of years where it felt like the Rams did it in the NFC Championship. All the teams have done it. To attack this cover 3 team, though, generally, the Seattle 3, you spread them, you outnumber them underneath, and you could pick them apart with a short passing game. The one thing that has stopped that, though, is when they start to come up and hit people, like Jimmy Ward's coming up to hit people. And, you know, we've seen Jaquiski Tartt through the year, you know, throughout. We've just seen them, you know, the linebackers play really well. Do the Niners cheat up, take away the short stuff, and say, here, challenge Sherman down the field. Challenge our big corners down the field. I would like to see if a team could really take away the short stuff from Brees. He'll hit a few over the top, but, you know, do you just make this offense less efficient?
Probably.
Because right now he's, you know, completing 75% of his passes or whatever it
right.
is.
Right. I mean, I think the danger with the replicating the sort of the game plan against the Patriots, you know, double Michael Thomas, try and take that away and then force him everywhere else, is that I think they have better everywhere else.
Right.
Like, they don't have, Drew Brees doesn't have problems going to Jared Cook, going to Alvin Kamara to the backfield. They've got Ted Ginn, who's still dangerous down the field, even if he isn't right. that great. Like, they have weapons that he will take advantage of if you force him away from Michael Thomas. Now, so far, nobody's even been close to being able to take away Michael Thomas over the past couple of years. I'm sure you would make a dent on that, doubling, bracketing, all that kind of thing. But teams really haven't been able to slow him down at all. I do think that the Saints are better equipped to handle that kind of game plan than the Patriots are. But sure, I think that's probably the way to do it and at least force them to something else, particularly with Drew Brees so reluctant at the moment or so just hasn't taken advantage of those deep shots this year the way he has in the past. You definitely need to force them to try and do some of that. It's always an interesting game plan, that idea, right? Let's take away the easy stuff and force them to do the difficult things, because inherently, if they actually, you're forcing them to adopt a game plan where if they actually manage to achieve it, it hurts you harder than anything else. It's like, we are going to force them into the high payoff plays and hope that they don't hit enough of them. The problem is, if they do, it's like touchdowns and huge plays and chunk plays, and those are the last thing you typically want to give up.
Yeah, Michael Thomas has only 9.2% of his targets have been into tight windows, second lowest in the NFL. So he's open.
Yeah.
Either with a step or more or whatever it is. And if you saw my nice tweet this week, powered by AWS, our friends over at Amazon Web Services, highest percentage of contested catches caught.
His number is insane.
He either gets open or he catches it when he's not open.
Right. He's catching like 88% of contested targets. The league leader is usually at like 65%. He's like 20% better than the league leader in that stuff, usually.
Yeah, so Michael Thomas has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Other side, you know, I think you just got to keep an eye on Garoppolo on the road. I think it's just got to be a mistake-free game for him.
Yeah.
That's been the one thing that's held down his grade, I think, is the random turnover-worthy play. He's not offsetting it with big-time throws. He never really has. But he's always been, you know, on that... He's always been on the game manager's safe side, but with a ton of positively graded plays. So he just hits the open man. They scheme it open for him. He does a nice job. This year, though, a little bit too many turn-of-worthy plays. And at inopportune times, we've seen too in the red zone, some bad fumbles in there. So Garoppolo has to play fast and, you know, work the scheme.
I think the Saints defensive front needs to stand up big. Obviously everybody knows what the 49ers want to do on offense. I think the Saints defensive line can win to the point where they slow that up and cause problems. I don't know if they will or not. And then the other thing is, you've got George Kittle, who's one of the most uncoverable players in the NFL, and the Saints are missing half their linebackers.
Right.
So that becomes a problem as well.
Yeah, middle of the field. Marshawn Lattimore? Maybe go see Kittle?
Maybe one of the either the only linebacker they've got left, Demario Davis, or you know, maybe you move a safety down. I don't know. That's why they pay other people those decisions. I'm just commenting.
Yeah, but just to be something.
I don't have the game plan.
Something to keep an eye on. Who are you going with in this one?
I went with the Saints.
Yeah, me as well. We're pretty much the same outside of we have three differences.
Okay.
According to my quick look here, and this is not one of them. Four differences. One of them was the Thursday night game where the Bears won. You guys saw it. All right, let's get to the rest of the slate. As expected coming into the season, the Baltimore Ravens at the Buffalo Bills with implications for a bye.
Yeah.
The number one seed Baltimore Ravens and the Buffalo Bills, 9-3.
Yeah, and so what's interesting about this game, and I don't think this is coincidental, is that there's basically no injury concerns for either team.
Nice.
So
you have done your homework very well with the injury reports this week. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. You know, a lot of the time it's like, why is this team unexpectedly good? And then, oh, nobody's hurt.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it. You know, when you get towards the end of the season, a lot of the times the good teams are the ones that just haven't lost half their players through injury.
Well, it's like all these advanced stats that are like, why is Ryan Tannehill completing such a high percentage of his passes? Well, first off, he has been accurate, but secondly, his guys aren't dropping them.
Mm.
Like nobody's looking at like, if you have a really below average drop rate, you're going to complete a higher percentage of your passes and that's out of your control. So yeah, anyway, the Bills defense, man. Love them. Love what they're able to do. They've got again, a multi-year track record of just playing well in that back seven, getting some good performances up front.
Well, like every week, the thing to watch in a Ravens game is, all right, how does this defense,
how do they do it,
try and deal with Lamar Jackson and this Baltimore offense? And it's insane. Like, the 49ers did a good job last week, but it was also pouring rain. So that's going to help as much as the defense does.
I mean, so in theory, you've got the Buffalo defense that likes to play that too high type of shell. But if it's quarters, so when you put two high safeties, it's generally favorable for the opposing team to run the ball. You have fewer guys in the box. But when you play quarters, your safeties are a little bit further up and they have run responsibilities. In cover two, they're just like getting deep, take away the deep ball. But in quarters, it's kind of like you're going to match up against the inside receiver and you're also going to play the run. So it's really like a nine-man box. So Buffalo, while they've had bouts where they've been gashed by the run, schematically they might have something that they play that they're comfortable with that can get the extra man in the box, but it puts a little bit more pressure on all their guys one-on-one. Their safeties, like, you know, they have to cover the tight ends one-on-one. You know, Tre'Davious White's of the world on the outside, you know, they have to cover Marquise Brown with the deep ball and all that stuff. So, you know, that'll be a good matchup to watch.
This defense is also kind of interesting because there's a lot of speed on it. So it's an intriguing defense in terms of how they match up with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense, because as you say, they do like to play more of two high safeties, which essentially invites the run. They have struggled against it at times, but you know, Baltimore's run game, so much of it is predicated on Lamar Jackson's speed, and they do actually have the speed to be effective against that. I still think if you're going to stop this offense, it's through speed rather than power. Like, I don't think you're going to overwhelm this offense with just brute strength up front the way you usually stop a run-heavy team. I think the way to slow them down is still being able to match the speed and take away the threat that Lamar Jackson has. I think Buffalo, in theory, can do that, but the question is, A, does it come at a cost? Will they, with the speed, surrender? Will they actually just get beaten through the air? You know, will they dare them to do that, and Baltimore can? Or will they just get beaten with a dive? Like, Baltimore can still hand the ball off every time to Gus Edwards and right. Mark Ingram, and you still have to be able to stop the power game as well.
That would be where the Bills don't have a great advantage. They're better than they were a couple of years ago when they would continue to get gashed in this scheme, but they don't really have the big horses up front.
Right.
Number 24 run defense grade for us so far this year. But, you know, again, they've been fantastic against the pass. So if they have a few more, number three coverage grade in the NFL. So if they're making the window's a little bit tighter for Lamar. This means Lamar, by the way, listen to this schedule. He will now have faced the four top coverage units in the NFL. Who do they play next week? It might be five in a row. So just based off coverage grade, Patriots number one, torch them. Niners number two, played them last week. He didn't torch them through the air, but you know, they found a way to win.
In rain.
This week, Buffalo. Number four is the Rams. Destroyed them on Monday Night Football. And then number five is the Steelers, who he has in a few weeks and already played earlier this year. And then number six is the Ravens, plays them in practice every day. How about that? So Lamar's going through a stretch.
And next week they play the Jets. So
they're 16th.
Yeah.
They're actually not that bad defensively this year. So he's going through this stretch that is really testing him. And New England, check. Rams, check. 49ers, yeah, okay. It's getting through it pretty well. But, you know, that's been Buffalo's MO here is they crowd passing lanes really well. They use their length underneath with Tremaine Edmonds pretty well. Love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is Lamar Jackson is genuinely, you know, taking command of the MVP race, according to most people. He is. This offense is pretty much unstoppable. Like, I'm chalking as much up last week to the conditions as I am the 49ers. So it's a huge challenge for this Buffalo defense. And then on the other side of the ball, everyone wants to crown Josh Allen because he played well when everyone was watching. Can he back that up the next week against a much better defense?
Bills fans are really angry at us right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, he played fantastically last week.
He played great.
But he hasn't done that all season long. If he played like that every single week, we would be crowning him one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. But he hasn't. So
I'm just having so much deja vu. 2016, the Giants won a ton of games. We had Giants fans left and right. Why is Eli your number 25 graded quarterback? Because he's not playing that well. And he's throwing like a 2 yard slant that Odell Beckham's taken to the house for 75 yards. That's where his passing yards are coming from. Yeah. In 2017, we didn't really have people crowning Bortles. I think people knew that Bortles was being dragged to the AFC Championship game rather than taking his team. He had a nice game against Pittsburgh in the playoffs, but he wasn't very good that year. And then the same thing with Trubisky last year. Bears fans just couldn't wrap their head around the fact that good things were happening to their team, even with the quarterback not playing all that well. So with Allen, again, I don't even want to say he's not playing poorly. He's played well over the last few weeks.
He was fantastic. Like last week, he made some absolutely incredible throws, looked great, was, you know, they made the sort of the play that isn't necessarily, you know, an incredible graded play or whatever, but is one of those ones that sort of gets everybody going, you know, the digging it out of the pile and muscling his way for the first down on a botched handoff, that kind of thing, or a botched snap. He played great last week. And if that was his baseline, I would be all for saying Josh Allen has become the player nobody thought he could be. He's incredible. He's a Pro Bowler. That's not where his baseline is. That was a significant departure from his baseline this season. So he hasn't been nearly as good as that. Now, what I want to see is, does he back that up? Can he do it again?
What I have been impressed with is his passing from 1 to 20 yards. We've talked about this all season, up to 19 yards, really. Short and intermediate game has been great. Number 5 grade in the NFL. And deep ball has been putrid. 32 grade, worst in the NFL. Here's my question with Allen. That I said, has he become what we thought Sam Darnold might become? Because the knock on Darnold coming out of USC was the deep ball was really inconsistent. But his short and intermediate accuracy was great. And he could anticipate and do some really nice things there. Josh Allen's profile this season might actually bode well. Like, I don't think we're going to go into this offseason being like expecting a massive regression next year, maybe as much as we did with Trubisky. I think he's doing well in the right areas. Those passes up to 20 yards, it's a bigger sample size, and it's a little bit more stable year to year. And the deep ball stuff kind of comes and goes. That was what I think was encouraging to me about Darnold, is like, you know, if the deep ball is weak, that's okay. Because if you get a good, because a lot of that's receiver driven. Mm-hmm. You get a receiver that can get open. You get an Allen Robinson that can go catch jump balls. All of a sudden, your deep ball, statistically at least, production wise, is good. With Allen, maybe there's something to that where it's like, man, he really has improved on some of the stuff that's difficult to improve. The footwork, the touch and accuracy on the short stuff. It's still not perfect, but he's been much better. And then the deep stuff, you know, give him a jump ball guy, give him, you know, John Brown getting open a few more times, maybe he won't miss him every time. You know, I mean, that could improve.
That, I mean, that's his issue, though, is that John Brown's getting open a lot and he's just missing him by 7 yards. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that's not fixable. I'm just saying that that's a problem right now that needs to change.
And that coincides with one of the reasons why he's not graded as highly as everyone else. He's got the second lowest percentage of big time throws out of like 39 guys.
Yeah.
Second lowest. He's not producing the stats, and the stats are actually pretty mediocre anyway overall. So yeah, Josh Allen at the very least is much must see TV. And I'll say this, Bills fans, he's got this week with the Ravens, he's got Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football, flexed game in a few weeks, and then he's got a trip to New England. He's got a stretch against some pretty good defenses where he can prove himself.
He's another one of those guys with the hidden fumbles as well, you know.
Oh, a ton of turnover-worthy plays that aren't showing up.
Right. Touchdown-to-interception ratio looks great, but because we're not talking about the fumbles, because people don't count those for quarterbacks for some reason. And again, so I've seen people make the argument that, well, a lot of fumbles are, you know, strip sacks, essentially. But we're, you know, accounting for that in the grading, right? So if his grade is terrible, and it is, his fumble grade is 27.9. So if his fumble grade is that bad, it means we're charging him for a lot of those fumbles, i.e. they're right. His fault. We're not charging him for strip sacks where he had no shot, right? So he is essentially, he's got a bunch of bad turnover-worthy ball security plays that people are not factoring in when they just look at the fact that he's only thrown 8 picks.
Yeah. Cole Beasley and John Brown have been just fantastic additions to that offense. The offensive line has improved. I think if you go back to our offseason Bills analysis, I think we liked a lot of what they did, and this has been the best case scenario. We were like, okay, they threw, I mean, they were throwing like 20 bodies at the offensive line to figure out who the five were, and they've improved. Beasley and Brown, hey, we said you give Josh Allen some guys that can get open.
Yep.
He can improve his short area stuff. That has happened.
Love those moves for him. I think those are two great moves for them.
So it should be a great game. 9-3 Bills against the 10-2 Baltimore Ravens. Where are you going with this one?
Baltimore.
Got to go. Everybody's going Baltimore except for Bruce, who's taking the Bills.
Bruce going rogue. Is it time to tell people about the last few days of our Cyber Week sale?
Oh, I think it is time.
Excellent. Cyber 40 is the promo code to use at PFF.com if you want 40% off any annual subscription, whether you're buying PFF Edge or Elite.
Wait,
Cyber 40.
We're giving 40% off for the year?
40% for the year.
When's this go away? Because
last few days. I think it runs through the end of this week. So get in there. Don't rely on me having any idea when the sale actually finishes. Just accept that it's happening soon and go by now.
So Cyber 40, 40% because, off. It could be Elite or Edge.
Yes, because my details are sketchy. So just get in there and buy it.
If you're gonna be getting the draft guide anyway, if you just want the draft guide, I would just sign up today because you'll get, it comes with the...
You'll get the draft guide. You'll get everything for a year. 365 days of access. Starting now.
So if you want the draft guide, you have the mid-season draft guide and the updated one at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So if you're just going to get the draft guide, you might as well just sign up this week. And if you're going to get premium stats for next year...
The draft guide having a ton of college content in it. College grades, college numbers, statistics, all that kind of stuff. In addition to Renner's scouting reports, all that kind of thing.
And then draft premium stats, green line, all that stuff. You get a year's access.
Yeah. Free agency. When your team signs a whole bunch of people, you get their grades, et cetera, et cetera.
So if you sign up today, you'll have access through pretty much like week 14 of next year.
Yeah.
That's a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
40% off Cyber 40.
Cyber 40.
All right. Next game. Our hometown Cincinnati Bengals travel into Cleveland to take on the Browns. The story about the Browns was that, the schedule gets easier down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is an example. But the Bengals are coming off their first win.
I think there's a very real chance that the Bengals win this game.
Because just when we thought Cleveland was going to get it together, and they're 10-0 up on the duck-led Steelers.
No. They're just not fixing any of the things that are wrong.
Yeah.
It's insane how they're unable to get those guys on the same page. The receivers and Baker Mayfield being unable to read the same things are crazy. It's unlikely to have fixed itself during the course of the week, if for no other reason than Baker didn't throw until Thursday because, we saw that play where he rammed his hand into somebody's face mask.
Right.
That was bad enough that he didn't throw the ball until Thursday of this week. So he hasn't, it's not like he's had reps to try and fix those things with the receivers. Not that he would fix that kind of thing in 3 days anyway, but they're going to, I think, bumble this entire way with all the problems that have been there all season long, at which point you look at the Bengals and you say, Andy Dalton's back. They're actually capable of causing some issues. They're not completely hopeless. Obviously Cleveland is without Myles Garrett for the rest of the season. So their primary source of pass rush to cause problems for one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL is no longer there. At which point, this is not a slam dunk win.
No, it's certainly not. If you're Freddie Kitchens, I don't know how much pressure is on him. I just don't know what the vibe is there.
Well,
inside the building.
So the thing is, right? It's one of the there's so many things wrong in Cleveland at the moment that it's difficult to. So, everyone wants to say everyone's to blame Baker. Baker's playing terribly. Quarterback's the problem. Okay, but what about his receivers always being in the wrong place, or at least in a different place?
Well, he's played better even statistically over the last few weeks. Hasn't had an interception.
And what about the offensive line? There's so many other things, right? But almost all of these things seem to ultimately come down to coaching, organization, discipline, all the things that would fall under the umbrella of coaching generally. And I'm not saying it's necessarily Freddie Kitchens' fault, but you're the guy, right? Whether it's you or your subordinates or... So it falls under your tree somewhere, right? So at some point, there's nobody else to take the blame for all this stuff, and it's not being fixed.
I don't know if they ever should have been the favorite in the division coming into the season, but I don't think people were wrong for expecting them to compete to be the best team in the North based off the talent that they have. And
yes.
I think the bottom line is the talent is still there. They still have plenty of talent that has been underachieving.
I think right now, if you forget the Myles Garrett thing, you know, he's suspended, not there anymore. If you assume he's still on the roster, I think this is the second most talented roster in the division. And the one that's ahead of it, the Baltimore Ravens, is only ahead of it because Lamar Jackson has taken such a monstrous leap this year.
Right.
Like, he's gone from a guy who, okay, you can just about win with him because he's so unique and therefore difficult to defend.
And they've built around everybody's skill set there.
But he's really not a good passer. To this year, it's like, okay, now he's basically unstoppable because he's become a good enough passer that now what do you do? So I think the Ravens, plus they've made some trades, you know, Marcus Peters comes in playing well, blah, blah, blah. So I think the Ravens are the most talented team, but Cleveland still on paper is the second most talented team in this division. And they're not playing like it. They're playing badly almost across the board.
Yeah. Where are you going with this one? That's all we got here.
I'm going, despite the fact that I think there's a very real chance the Bengals win, I went with Cleveland.
Bruce going rogue again. He's taking the Bengals.
Well, he's got to catch up some games.
He's been trying to catch up since week three.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of worked because
you and I are
one
tied.
Behind me and you.
We're tied.
Well, yeah, we had bad games. Bad weeks, rather.
Nathan gets so far ahead.
Well, Nathan got so far ahead because he waits for the injury report.
We didn't let him wait this week. Else. But we almost, there's a lot of consensus picks this week, though, it seems. We're pretty close to it. All right, Detroit Lions at the Minnesota Vikings. The Lions have a shot here.
They have a shot. The Vikings' concern is they're one of those teams that's starting to get quite banged up. You know, we said that the Bills and the Ravens is basically nobody hurt. The Vikings are starting to add members of their team that are in that busted up list, and they're important people. So they've been without Adam Thielen for a couple of weeks. Dalvin Cook took a shot in the game against Seattle on Monday night. And so he took a shot. It was apparently a shoulder injury, but for the second week in a row, the Vikings have listed it as a chest injury, which kind of sounds a lot like, you know, when I thought I'd broken a rib and it turns out it was just some cartilage in that general area.
Yeah.
But the point is for him, it's like he's just limited constantly, right? Yeah. So you're going to be dealing with, this is going to be a long-term thing of him just having to manage it.
Fred Taylor.
Not practice, you know, not take the beating midweek and then go out there and see if he can last through the game.
Dalvin Fred Taylor.
Right. But the point is, Dalvin Cook is not 100%. Adam Thielen is probably not playing. I think Linval Joseph, Riley Reiff is in the concussion protocol. Like, they're just starting to miss some pretty important people on that team. And more is starting to rest on the shoulders of Kirk Cousins. And as much as he's been playing well, I don't know if there's a human being in the world that thinks that that's a surefire bet.
Having faith.
Yeah.
I did Matthew Collar's radio show up in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
He listens to the show. He's a fan.
Okay.
Fan of the show. He particularly likes our Manscaped ads.
Who doesn't?
I mean, he thinks we do a good job of awkwardly selling Manscaped.
They ran a TV ad?
They had a real ad, yeah.
That didn't in any way, shape, or form have a pun in it. I was extremely disappointed.
No, they make us do all the puns.
Right. On the read.
It's like serious on TV and then...
Oh, I texted funny. You all this, right? I went to their website. And they have, you know, we keep thinking, oh, what was the deal with the 1.0, the Lomar 1.0? Because the 2.0 has had a lot of
improvements. They're not a sponsor this week, so can't.
We can. Look, it's a tangent. It's a bonus. It's a freebie. Right? On their website, there is a side-by-side comparison of the Lomar 2.0 and the 1.0. And I gave you like a list of all the things that have been upgraded.
Oh, the 2.0 is well worth it. What's the promo code again while we're here?
I don't even remember.
PFF?
Sure. Give it a shot.
I think promo code PFF of Manscaped if you want to see the breakdown for the 2.0.
It's got better battery life. It's got some snag-safe technology that makes you don't, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Anyway, we had a good discussion about Kirk Cousins.
When did we do that?
Matthew and I. Okay, yeah. So basically, if we could say, everybody said, PFF's not perfect. And we're like, okay, not claiming perfection. I think we're the best at evaluating individual performance. And I think if you have our database and you have the play-by-play grades in there, and you give it to a smart guy like an Eric or a George, they know what to do with it. They know how to interpret it. They know how to make things, you know, predictive going forward. It's valuable and gold, and it's the best thing out there. But I can fully admit there's probably some things that we don't capture, right? We on the same page with that?
Mm-hmm.
What is it about Cousins through the years? And maybe this year is completely different. is there something to it? As we, even though he played well for the majority of the game the other night, it's fourth and five. It's a must-have play, and he just throws it in. Yeah, just throws it incomplete. Game's over, pretty much, for the Vikings.
And the third down was as bad, right? The two plays. I think there was a first down to be had on both those plays, and instead he threw it into tight coverage.
So even though we do a play-by-play grading, and over time it's going to tell you the story, but at the same time, I always use Brady as an example, right? Brady is a guy that, if you know, game flow will dictate how aggressive he is. So if he has to make a comeback, you pulled out the stat a couple of years ago, he's actually one of the more aggressive quarterbacks in what, like fourth quarter, close situations, whatever it is, and the highest graded for a few years. So he can dink and dunk. He can throw intermediate stuff. He can throw down the field. And I've always said, I think QB wins and losses and record, well, it might not be great standalone. If you have a big sample size, it gets you in the ballpark. And then if you change it situationally, I think it might tell a little bit of a story. And with Brady, whether it's, you know, you put the ball in his hands 40 times, 50 times, like by far the highest winning percentage, fourth quarter comebacks, he's the best. Like he's the best at all these situational things, right? Cousins always feels like the guy that situationally isn't there, even if the grade or the stats are always there because he's got good stats. But situationally, he plays just well enough to lose. And I know you're looking for that old aggressiveness chart and all that stuff. Is there something to, we'll get you the grade. The grade's going to get you 80% of the way there, 90% of the way there. But there is something that separates the guys that we feel like are more clutch or do it over and over in crunch time versus the guys that don't. Is there just something that little piece is missing for Cousins? And then I have a more tangible descriptor of it, but this is like the intangible descriptor. Is there just something to it?
I mean, it's possible. The other thing is these things are a case of the smaller and smaller you start chopping the sample sizes, the more susceptible they are to just, you know, freak runs in that direction.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not talking about, I don't care that he's like 0-8 on like his Monday night football record. Doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't. This includes 1 o'clock games as well. Right. There's something just missing there. And so the more tangible example that I came to is just comparing him to like a slightly better version of Sam Bradford, of Andy Dalton. And you've mentioned this before. There's something to just natural instincts when the game's moving. Right. And it feels like the best quarterbacks, you know, like if you give Cousins 1, 2, 3, hit this guy, hit this guy, then hit this guy, boom, he'll go through his reads. But if anything goes awry, he has to move in the pocket, do something outside of structure, whatever it is, he's just not doing it. I think that's what always kind of held Sam Bradford and probably Andy Dalton back.
Yeah, I mean, that was the incredible thing about when, you know, our guy Kevin Cole started posting all these charts about quarterbacks' aggressiveness versus basically where they had the lead, how likely they were to win the game, which effectively is, are you up or down, right?
Right.
And Peyton Manning in particular, but Tom Brady was right there as well. Peyton Manning, like if you were drawing what the curve should look like in terms of, all right, if you're playing from behind, how aggressive you should be, if you're playing with a lead, you know, and it should essentially form a pretty clear curve based off how likely the game
right.
is.
Less aggressive when you're ahead and more aggressive when you're down.
Manning's was like perfect. It was exactly as it should be. It's like years ago, we ran these numbers to find out, you know, how often is each side of the field targeted? And most right-handed quarterbacks just automatically lent to the right-hand side more often. Peyton Manning was the only quarterback in the NFL that was 50-50. Right? It's just all that stuff that you think nobody is possibly thinking of or calculating or doing. Manning was always the guy that was 100% dead on, exactly as it should be scientifically done.
Right.
And Cousins is like, I think, the other end of the spectrum, where it's just, he will always be off with that stuff.
Yeah.
And it may only be slightly, but it all adds up. And eventually it comes together and it's like, there's just something missing all the time.
Yeah. And that's not to say like, yeah, he had a nice little comeback against the Broncos and like, there's nothing's 100%.
Right.
Because Brady and Manning have failed in big situations before too, but it's just, you know, how often.
You know,
Cousins has a lot to do to undo
right.
you know, these perceptions.
These things are all about just gaining an edge somewhere, right? It's like the John Harbaugh fourth down call stuff, right? Just by getting all of those right or most of them right, you're just giving your team this consistent edge every single time. So with Cousins, it's like, all right, yeah, sometimes you're going to miss, but maybe if you've been doing those things, you would have hit one of those two late throws, the third or the fourth down. He didn't need to hit both of them, just one of them.
Right.
But instead, he, you know, goes 0-for and doesn't get them.
If you're a Lions fan, I'm just going to keep you or keep telling you every single week, just watch Imani Oruwariye, 84 grade through his two significant games of snaps.
Mm-hmm.
Allowed a passer rating of 54.6 into his coverage, has an interception against Dwayne Haskins. So, hey, is he a nice, you know, CB2 of the future?
Yeah, I think there's a good chance he is. This game is a 12.5 point spread. That seems insane, no?
Yeah, I mean, third string QBs.
Yeah, but, you know, the Vikings, and they're missing everybody.
Yeah, but the Vikings are efficient. I mean, even when I was talking to Matthew yesterday, I started out by talking about the run game. I mean, they're actually, they're blocking a little bit better up front. They're a little bit more, you know, they're scheming it up run game-wise. And I think, here's the thing about Minnesota. He started by asking me the question, is Minnesota's offense good enough to win? I think they are. For all that we say about Cousins, I think Cousins is good enough. I think their receivers, even when banged up, are good enough, including their tight ends. And they have a running game. They can at least have answers to what the defense throws at them. And I think that's encouraging for the Vikings. We're all taking Minnesota?
Yeah.
All right. Now let's tell you about our friends over at Proper Cloth. That's what we're wearing right here. It's all customized and custom made. So they will be supplying our shirts for the foreseeable future.
And quite the level of customization as possible in that they can fit you.
How'd you do? You get the brown buttons.
These are coconut shell.
Coconut shell buttons?
I believe that's what they were.
Just
the basic
buttons here. Let me just tell you, I've gotten custom made shirts.
Renner got all of his monogrammed.
He did?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't. I mean, you could do that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't go monogram.
I have a bunch of monogram shirts.
I know you do.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't go with the monogram, to be honest. Also, you can. There's like a bunch of different places you can put the monogram. Like you can cuff it. It's all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. I got a shirt that says, I love daddy from, you know, my sons, everything like that. Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
It's great. Anyway, I've done the custom. I had to do the custom made shirt thing a few years ago because of the body type and all that stuff. It is an absolute life changer. And, you know, you go from like, okay, to have something long enough, I have to look like I'm 500 pounds. Mm. The fact that I actually have it fit here and fit here and I can choose the nice material and I can choose the buttons and I can choose, you know, the pattern in the cuff and all that stuff. It's all great. You had a lot of fun with all that stuff. And it's so easy because the thing about the custom made stuff, men hate shopping in general. So you just go online, put your measurements in, and take a look at all the stuff and do whatever you want in the comfort of your own home.
So I obviously have a very smaller version of the same problem that you do, right?
Right.
Because you're, you know, basically no part of your dimensions makes sense. You shouldn't, you know, people aren't supposed to look like you. They're smaller, generally, right?
Yes.
But I have the same idea, right? Which is I have long arms for my body size, right? So typically, if I get stuff that fits, you know, vertically, the arms cut off like here. That's a pain in the ass, right? I have to get long arm things. So you can specify that with the proper cloth thing. You can specify extra watch rim on the left cuff.
I got that. I forgot my watch today, but I got that.
Yeah. So I got that for this one. And consequently, the watch fits.
Yeah. There's over 30 different styles to get the exact style that you want, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, there's even more than that, right? Because that's just like the style of, that's the sort of cut as opposed to the.
I mean, technically you can. With all the different
there's
options.
There's like 30 different patterns.
Hundreds, right.
Yeah, like plus the different styles of shirt. The thing is, it's insane.
The team at Proper Cloth works with the very best fabric producers from around the world. These are nice. Each one of their shirts goes through extensive quality control testing, so you're getting the absolute best quality and craftsmanship. You can get $20 off your shirt. That's what we're giving away here with our promo code. Propercloth.com/PFF. That's where you want to go. Propercloth.com/PFF. Enter the gift code PFF20 to save $20 off your first shirt.
And the shirts start as low as $80. So if you're getting $20 off it, fully customized, like tailored.
Sounds like a $60 shirt.
It does. 25%. Fully tailored. Like perfect fit to you. You can save your fit, like, you know, Steve 1 or whatever.
Oh, that's great. So I have Steve Business 1 saved. And the website's really easy to use, too, because it's like, oh, you just saved this. Do you want to apply it to the four shirts you're buying right now? I said, yep, let's do it.
I do.
Very easy to use. So stop wearing shirts that don't fit. I did it a few years ago, and you should, too. Start looking your best with a custom-fitted shirt. See why Proper Cloth is the best custom shirt maker. Go to propercloth.com/PFF. $20 off your first shirt using the promo code PFF20.
Yes.
We even have George and Eric wearing these things.
They even have like the
Austin and Mike,
the collarless thing that George likes to wear.
Yes.
Whatever style that's called.
Even George likes them. It should be one of our taglines
for anything, to be honest.
Jingle balls to the walls. Oh, wait, that's the wrong.
Jingle balls to the wall.
Washington Redskins at the Green Bay Packers. We're all taking the Packers. Any reason to believe that the Redskins have a shot here?
No.
Dwayne Haskins showed signs of life last week. He actually graded pretty well in the game.
Yeah.
It didn't show up in the box score at all because his best throws were incomplete.
Mm. Like, yeah, for the first time, ironically, Terry McLaurin was the one letting down Dwayne Haskins.
Really did on that deep ball.
Yeah.
But Terry McLaurin versus Jair, that's what you're looking for.
That is definitely the thing I'm watching for in this game. McLaurin against anybody is like he's genuinely become one of the best receivers in the NFL right out of the gate. Him going up against Jair, who started the season on fire, has since not been quite as good, but is still a very tough corner to beat consistently. Those two going one-on-one should be pretty good.
Aaron Rodgers played much better last week against the New York Giants. Still have some question marks with him.
Every week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in, like, just like some other teams are in a stretch of, you know, Josh Allen's going to be challenged the next few weeks. Aaron Rodgers is in a few week situation where he should be dominating. So we'll see what happens there. I don't have much else on this game. We're all taking Green Bay.
No, I grow jaded of the Aaron Rodgers postmortem / witch hunt.
Yeah. Not everybody knows what you're talking about.
There's just a bunch of people that want to write Aaron Rodgers off constantly.
I think there's a lot out there using team-driven. I saw another one today from the guy who does whatever the ESPN morning show is now.
Get up.
Is
that what it's called?
First up, take up. It's one of those things. One of those words. One of the producers there. You know, it's just Aaron Rodgers is an average quarterback. Statistically, since 2017, he kind of has been. But our grades have been a little bit more kind to him during that time. And so here's the thing about PFF grades and all that stuff. I'll tell you how much things are weighted generally. And if you want to weigh those less, you can go ahead and do that. So there's plenty of people who don't think turnovers are as big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And our grades reflect that, because obviously if you throw a Hail Mary or something like that, it's not a turnover worthy play. You're just chucking it up, and if it's picked off, who cares? So there are certain plays where we say, oh yeah, you took that third down shot, and you know, it's a bit of an arm punt, even though I don't believe in arm punts because you don't have a coverage team. It's not really a punt given a free return. So some people like to weigh turnover worthy plays differently. If you don't care about turnover worthy plays and you're a Jameis fan, you're like, who cares if he throws the ball into harm's way 3 or 4 times per game? He's going to move me down the field and score 28 points. You might believe that, but Rodgers is still a guy who can make special throws and does, and pretty much avoids turnover worthy plays.
Yeah.
And that helps keep the grade high. The problem is he doing that to the detriment of, you know, taking an extra sack here and there, checking down earlier than he should, throwing the ball away when he might have a 50-50 ball? That is where I think he's leaving plays on the table. It's reflected in the grade because he's not grading at 90.
Right.
He's not up there right now, but he's definitely leaving some plays on the table, some easier ones, some expected plays on the table, despite doing a really good job of taking care of the football.
And honestly, anybody that does believe that, you know, turnovers don't really matter, it is still, I think, the single biggest statistic correlated to wins.
It is, but it's, so the point is, and you know, Kev Cole's made this point quite a bit too, the same way Cousins isn't taking chances down the stretch, Aaron Rodgers isn't. So you talked about Peyton's got the perfect curve.
No, I'm not saying
Brady's got the perfect curve. Right. And then Aaron Rodgers, it's like, why are you not?
I'm not saying that turnovers should therefore be avoided at all costs, because obviously at some point you actually need to generate some points yourself and there's a balance there. Right. But I'm saying that it would be pretty foolish, I think, to dismiss the importance of throwing turnovers.
Right. And so here's the thing, right? Brady and Manning won at an extremely high level throughout their career. So they're playing with game flow that is in their favor 60-70% of the time, right? So they don't have to be as aggressive. Rodgers has kind of been in that same boat. Now, Breeze hasn't won that much in his career. He's had to play in shootouts. Rodgers hasn't had to play in a ton of shootouts all the time, and he's generally winning more than he's losing. Did he just get into this comfort level of playing with the lead more often than not and not playing from behind? Because he's been in some blowout situations over the last couple of weeks, the same way we talked about Derek Carr. Why are you not throwing the ball down the field in a blowout when you're down by a lot. Just be aggressive. Who cares if you throw some picks? You're going to lose anyway.
I think that it can be fairly easy to essentially head down a particular avenue of playing style and get stuck in a rut of this is how I am, even though at the beginning it may have just been a small facet of your game. So Aaron Rodgers has always had a tendency to essentially take a sack rather than a pick, rather than throw a pick, right? He's always had a tendency to do that. I would prefer to lose some yardage, take a negative play, throw it away, than put the ball in harm's way. And initially that was great because it was just a tendency, right? And he would still make a ton of aggressive throws, and it was just he didn't make the idiot mistake and would take a slightly worse or a slightly better play, albeit still negative. Then when that's just a small tendency, you start, you tilt the favor a little bit that way, and you start leaning ever more in that direction. Just bit by bit by bit by bit, you end up, you suddenly wake up one day and you're like, wow, I'm way too conservative, because you've just been, it's like weight gain, right? You just put on, you know, a pound every week. You don't really notice it go on. Then suddenly you look in the mirror and like, holy crap, I'm a fat, you know, mess.
Been there. Yeah.
Right. That's basically what Rodgers has been doing, right? Just bit by bit by bit, he's gotten more and more conservative, and suddenly you wake up and it's like, whoa, this has gone too far.
See, I think a lot of his taking sacks is because he really wants the big play too. I think he likes the big play.
Sure. But
and he just waits too long for it to unlock.
Another place I think that this could be happening is Baker Mayfield, right? Where it's like his tendency to hold on too long, try and play hero ball, try and run out and bounce from clean pockets and do crazy things on the run himself. Right at the beginning, it's like, all right, this is a small negative in his game. This is a thing that's not ideal, but it doesn't happen very often, so it's no big deal, right? Now it's happening more.
When it happens more often.
And it might be happening more and more, and if it keeps going in that direction, suddenly you end up, it's like, well, you just suck now, because this is bad.
Yeah.
And teams know how to defend that, and if you don't stay in the pocket enough, like, you're just making life too easy for them. So I think that generally, and it's not just, those are two very similar examples, but I think across the board, this can happen to people, to quarterbacks, right? They can start to lean on a tendency and just end up like going to it too far. Like Jameis, I think the same thing is happening with the other end of the spectrum, right? Just the volatility, just right. The YOLO aspect. Like that was always in Jameis, and he's just leaning full on into it and going, I am just going to go down swinging.
It's a good point. It's almost like if you're reading a scouting report, it's like a line in the scouting report.
Yeah.
Does this thing. And it goes from, he does this thing,
and the important
3% of the time.
Right, the important thing is how often. The important thing is how often does he do it?
And right.
At the beginning, the answer is not very often.
Right.
But if in 3 years' time, it's like half his game now.
Right. It's always been a weakness, but does it double how often it happens?
So like you watch these games where, and honestly, like sometimes it's incredibly laudable because they're like down by 28 points, and you watch Jameis go out and he's just still swinging. It's like, we are going to go down with this ship lobbing grenades off the side.
If you could just have Aaron Rodgers with the lead and Jameis when you're behind.
Right. But I think ultimately Rodgers has just gone too far down that path. I think he's probably realized it at this point, but I just don't know if you can claw your way back.
The weird part about everything Rodgers related is you could put him in the conversation with the best quarterbacks of all time because of what he did within the structure of the offense. Because you can make a highlight reel that's as good as anybody's, fine. Other people have had great highlight reels, but his pre-snap work, his just getting guys to jump off sides, the 12, like he did every little thing extremely well. Short area accuracy, decision make, everything was there. And over the last couple of years, with multiple offensive coordinators now, he's lost some of the, you know, attacking the middle of the field and some of the easy stuff, taking the easy stuff.
It's such a weird dynamic as well, because I looked up today, he is number three in terms of deep ball percentage, right? So you think it, we're talking about him as being too conservative, right? And a lot of people, when they think of that, it's like, well, he doesn't go deep very often at all. And Rodgers goes deep the third most of any quarterback in the NFL. Matthew Stafford is number one. Russell Wilson is number two. Rodgers is three. So ahead of Patrick Mahomes, ahead of Deshaun Watson, ahead of Jameis, YOLO Jameis, Rodgers goes deep more than those guys, right? So he does, and when he goes deep, like he has the second, I think he's number two in terms of passer rating. He's got a passer rating of 124 when he goes deep. 9 touchdowns, 1 pick. So he takes a ton of deep shots. He's really good when he does it. His lack of sort of aggression, his conservative streak is more the intermediate route, relatively routine, over the middle stuff. So again, it's like, it's just shaving percentage points off what he should be able to achieve. But it's not like, it's not like the Alex Smith thing, right? Where it's, well, like, you just don't ever throw the ball deep.
The intermediate level is the most efficient in the NFL. Right. We call that that's the 10 to 19 yard level, because it's almost always beyond the sticks. And, you know, if you're throwing it there, you usually have a good reason to. And I think that is where he shies away, like throwing a guy open, through, you know, away from a zone or whatever it is.
But it's so much harder to see. Right. So with Alex Smith, it was obvious, right?
Just
you will not put the ball in the air deep down the field. And it's painfully obvious, because you can see these guys streaking deep and you can see teams coming up and you're just not respecting it. And, you know, you just need to throw the deep ball. Rodgers is doing that. And where he shies away from being aggressive is quite hard to pick up over the course of a game. And that's why, you know, so much of the debate around him is some people pointing at the numbers, like, and then the other people just pulling out all these plays where he makes them, you know, where he makes the exact play we're talking about him not making, right?
Right.
And it's because we're not talking about him never doing it. We're saying that his tendency is just shaving off like a throw here and there. And those are the throws that make the difference between him being good and great. That's why the conversation is such a nightmare, because it's too nuanced to have.
Here are the stats.
Yeah.
Since 2017. The exact yards per attempt of the average quarterback, 7.4. Fewer yards per dropback than the average quarterback. Same yards per completion. Lower percentage of first downs per attempt. And about the same QBR, if you're using QBR.
Yeah.
And the declaration that Aaron Rodgers is an average quarterback.
That being said, we're all going Green Bay.
So much for being quick on that game. Miami Dolphins at the New York Jets. Definitely take a little bit less time here. If you're a Dolphins or a Jets fan, listen to 2-for-1 drafts.
Hmm.
Because they talk about draft prospects.
Yes. Okay. Smart.
That's where your head should be.
Okay. So the only things you need to know about this game, Kalen Ballage is on IR, so we finally stop getting subjected to the misery that is him carrying the ball. Jamal Adams is likely out, so the most entertaining thing in this game isn't featuring. The only thing remaining, therefore, in this game is Ryan Fitzpatrick and his YOLO balls.
YOLO balling.
Which was amazing last year. Somebody pulled up today sort of sequence of wide receivers that have made a ton of money because Ryan Fitzpatrick has just been throwing the ball in their direction. Yeah. Devontae Parker may be the next one if he has another couple of games like he did a week ago. Like, that's what Fitzpatrick does. He will give you a chance to make a play. Sometimes it goes very, very wrong because he's off by half a yard. Sometimes, though, it goes very, very right. And sometimes in the middle, it's all down to how good the receiver is, because he's going to give you a chance to make a play. And if, you know, you're either going to take advantage of that or not. But either way, like, again, him just going out there and just going to hell with this, I'm throwing, is fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm interested to see him and Devontae Parker again, because Parker in year five, is it opportunity driven?
Yes.
Is it like, because he's number five in contested catch rate this year. And, you know, remember what I said about Derrick Henry last week? It's like, here's this physical freak who just kind of like flipped a switch and started playing more physical and running like a 250 pounder more often. Has that happened with Parker? He's this big, big bodied receiver who had some finesse to his game. He could run routes coming out and all that stuff. But has he just decided to play up to his physical capabilities?
I mean,
this season?
Yeah. He's also not playing that well, right? Like, last week was amazing. Last week was just him and
He's got like a 5-week stretch.
Five-week stretch, the grades aren't great.
That's a lot of green.
Look, we got one elite grade in there. My point is, last week was peak YOLO to Parker. He was making jump catches left, right, and center. That's why he ended up with 160 yards, 2 touchdowns. But outside of that, it hasn't been great. Like, he's had another good game. The Bills game was important because that was tough competition. But like, it's still more promise, I think, than, you know, superstardom.
All right. Well, I'm going to keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, Fitzpatrick YOLO ball, and it's fun to watch.
Where are you going in this one?
Jets. On the basis that they can't possibly go 0-3 against the Dolphins.
I also took the Jets.
All of us did.
The Jets were bad last week against the Bengals.
Yeah. I refuse to believe they're going 0-3 against the Dolphins and the Bengals. That would be absurd.
All right. Carolina Panthers at the Atlanta Falcons. Another matchup where I think they need to listen to the draft podcast now. Ron Rivera is out. Is it Perry Fuel taking over?
Yes,
I believe,
as interim head coach. Then there's some weird like scenario of assistant to the head. Like Norm is some sort of special assistant now.
Norv, yeah.
And somebody else has come in to call plays or to be the offense coordinator.
Yeah, so it's just another week for Kyle Allen to prove himself. And
not turning to Will Grier.
Not turning to Will Grier.
Though, as we said, or at least I said, I don't know that I disagree with that.
No, I don't think. I mean, just give more reps to Kyle.
That's what I'm saying.
Some injuries on both sides. What do you got, Doc?
I don't know that Carolina have anybody left in the middle of their defense on the line, which could be a problem.
Yeah.
Gerald McCoy didn't practice Wednesday. He hopes to play, but I think that's largely... I think that's largely on the basis of Dontari Poe has already gone to IR, as Kawan Short is on IR as well. Like, it's basically McCoy on his own in the middle. And if he can't play, I don't even know who they're turning to. So I would imagine he is hopeful he will play, as are the Panthers, because if he can't, that's going to be a problem.
Julio's on track to return for the Falcons. Mm-hmm. Got to see if they can keep Ryan healthy down the stretch here. Facing a ton of pressure so far this season.
Yeah, though if they don't have any defensive linemen, that will help.
Yeah. Ryan's grade's like a 90 or something like that in clean pocket, 90 or so. It's like a 38.
Yeah.
Under pressure this year. That's the story of Atlanta's offense this year.
But they fixed their offensive line in the draft.
Take some time. Might take some time. We're still all going Atlanta here at home against Carolina. I still like their talented team. Should be playing better.
Okay.
You taking Atlanta as well?
Yeah, everybody did. Unanimous.
Anything else on that game?
Nope.
Good. Doesn't matter if it's football or financial wellness, the right questions will always give you the best chance for a win. Western and Southern has partnered with us at PFF to give you a chance for an up close and personal look at the X's and O's that'll lead to both financial and football success. If you're looking for insight on your financial future or need an inside the huddle tip.
Ah.
How's that?
Inside the Tuttle Hip.
How's that? Inside the Huddle Tip. You got to head to westernsouthern.com/ask-Chris. That's westernsouthern.com/ask-Chris. Chris Collinsworth, C-R-I-S, to ask Western Southern and PFF your most pressing questions. You could even win tickets to the big game. You know the game I'm talking about at the end of the season.
Ask some good ones, too, because I have to choose them.
Oh, that's your job?
So I get like presented with a list of these things on Monday and I have to choose the good ones.
I'm going to do it right now.
I don't want your questions.
About the next game, Colt at Bucks.
I don't want your questions. I'm just saying, if you're going to do this, go and ask a good question because I'm the guy that has to choose the good questions.
WesternSouthern.com/ask.
Yeah, stop doing that. What is our next game? Indianapolis Colts at Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm going to get a question. WesternSouthern.com/ask-Chris so you can... tell him Steve sent you, so Sam knows.
I think that's part of the form.
All right, what are you looking for in this Bucks and Colts game? A little Andrew Luck versus Jameis?
No. So, Jacoby Brissett, I think, is going to be called upon to do something in this game on the basis that the Bucks have a good run defense. And that, to be honest, that matchup is going to be fun. Indianapolis offensive line against Tampa Bay's run defense. Assuming Tampa Bay's run defense holds up, i.e. Vita Vea holds up, against Quentin Nelson. That's going to be fun.
You're on NFL Network tomorrow. Is that one of the matchups you're talking about?
Yes.
Or on Friday, today, if you're paying attention.
Friday.
NFL Now.
Midday sometime.
Midday afternoon show. Check out Sam. We'll be breaking down that matchup.
Consequently, if the Colts are one of those teams that wants to establish the run, take the ball out of the hands of their quarterback a lot, can Jacoby Brissett step up and win the game if they need him to? Which I think they might.
Yeah, a lot of people went Tampa Bay in this one. Is that right?
Yeah. Only you, in fact, went with the Colts.
One of the ones where we differ. Yeah, I like Indy. Indy plays zone. Indy playing zone against Jameis.
Adam Vinatieri has now developed an injury.
I know.
Questionable. This is kind of like earlier in the season, you know, where it's like, we thought he was going to retire. And then, I genuinely don't understand how you just forget how to kick at the age of, like, whatever he is, 48. What is the deal with that?
How can you not understand?
How do you forget how to kick? You've been doing this for like the last 25 years.
It's physical.
No, it's not. He's missing like extra points.
It's physical.
What is physically preventing him from kicking an extra point?
because if something's off physically, it was like when Peyton lost his arm. Like if you can't do things, you have to adjust.
No,
you can't do
Morton
things.
Anderson could have been wheeled out at the age of 75. He would still hit a 22-yard field goal. That would be his range, but he would still hit that.
Like
all that happened with Morton Anderson, the older he got, is the distance from which he could make the kick got shorter and shorter.
You only get to see the one that he tries.
What?
He might hit 30 out of 30 in practice, and you only get to see the one that he misses.
Okay. Those are the important ones.
Yeah, I know.
So that's what I'm judging him on. Why has he forgotten how to kick?
Small sample size. I'm taking the Colts in this one. Jameis is going to throw a few picks. The Colts D.
Usually a safe bet.
How's that? Middle of the Colts defense.
Cesium out there. He even picks left and right.
Any other important injuries? No. Jamel Dean should be good. He's playing really well.
Yeah.
Making some plays. I'm taking the Colts. You're taking the Bucks. Denver Broncos at the Houston Texans. Feels like every Broncos play teams that have like letdown. It's like a letdown week
for everybody.
Yeah. Coming off a big high win against the Patriots.
Obviously, the interesting thing for Denver's point of view is Drew Locke.
Yeah.
Because, you know, their season's not exactly interesting.
So he had his two touchdowns were pretty good. He had the deep ball to Cortland Sutton. Sutton made a great catch, but he put it in a good spot. Did a nice job on his other touchdown, kind of maneuvering the pocket, finding the open man. And then completely misread a linebacker in the middle of the field. I thought last year at Missouri, you know, his career in Missouri, he was pretty good in the red zone. Like he was good with, you know, the tight area stuff, but not. He was almost like, you know, a lot of the same stuff that we saw at Missouri. So red zone stuff was good. Can throw the deep ball, but some poor decisions in the middle of the field. He didn't have to read the middle of the field a whole lot during his career at Missouri. So that's what I'll be watching for as far as Drew Locke's development goes.
One of the players that's got problems for Denver is Ron O'Leary. He's in the concussion protocol. If he can't go, like this is a bad week to be missing guards because DJ Reader is one of the guys we talked about as being one of the most, having one of the best breakout seasons really of any player in the NFL. He's in a contract year, as we talked about midweek on YouTube. He has become a force both against the run and as a pass rusher. And if you don't have your starting guards, that could be issues, particularly when you're trying to protect a young quarterback who's prone to making some mistakes here and there.
Denver's pass defense could keep it close, potentially.
Good.
It's a decent unit.
Poor old Chris Harris, just murderer's row of top quality wide receivers he has to face week in, week out.
Nuke, Fuller.
Right. Whichever one, to be honest, he ends up either they give him the speedster again because he's had a ton of those all season right. or they give him Nuke.
I've been saying it a lot, but the Texans have a good little group of playmakers. I want to see how they develop and use them over the last, you know, month of the season here and see if that makes them even more dangerous heading into the playoffs. I think we're all taking Houston, though.
Yeah.
Los Angeles Chargers traveling east to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And the mustache.
Is back
to take on the mustache who starts, surprising as that is.
A lot of Minshew love here because everybody other than Nathan and Jeff Ratcliffe taking the Jags in this one.
I was very surprised that they went back to Minshew. Not because I disagree with the decision, because to be honest, I think he probably does give them the best chance to win. But we talked Monday about how it's not like he came in, they caught fire and executed right. this great comeback. Like he played badly enough when he came in that I thought they had cover to go back to Foles this week and say, all right, let's try it again. And, you know, if Foles stank this week, then fine. Now you can make a decision. But like he started moving the ball. They scored a touchdown and then didn't really do a whole lot after that. But they've come out and said, no, we're making the move. We're going to Minshew. And, you know, he's had something this year where he's able to just get them to rally around him. He's able to put his receivers in a good spot to make plays. Different to Fitzpatrick, where Fitzpatrick just goes out there and YOLO balls and hopes they'll come down with it. Whereas Minshew, I think, is actually able to place the ball accurately. What are you looking at and reading?
The chat
is trying to determine the color of your shirt.
What is the question?
Is there an official color name for it?
I mean, I'm sure there is, but why...
We got people saying red. We have seen people saying burnt orange. It's not burnt orange.
It's orangey.
It's orangey.
It does look redder on the monitor. I'll give them that.
It does. I think that might be the tilt of the monitor.
Yeah. It looks more orange in person than it does on the monitor.
Mine's blue and orange. Go Gators. It's orange.
That's orange?
Ish.
That looks quite pink.
It's peach. Peach.
Maybe Peach. Sorry, go ahead.
So I think Minshew's actually putting the ball in accurate spots for his receivers to make plays, as opposed to Fitzpatrick that's just heaving in the general direction. But it's just a fact, like, that's an interesting call, because now you got Nick Foles on the hook for this monster contract, and you've benched him for a 6th-round rookie.
Yeah. I would have stuck with Foles probably too.
I would have stuck with him for at least another week.
But, you know, here's the question though too. You got all this money invested in Foles, but are you just going to be like, all right, we're going to roll with Minshew as the future and continue to draft?
This is what
someone
does. Like, this is what I said right at the start of the season when Minshew came in and looked like he might be able to do something. I was like, so Minshew's costing them nothing. Like, the dude's a 6th-round rookie. He's paid peanuts. And Foles' contract, as much as it's decent, is not monstrous.
Right.
So can you keep Foles on that money as a backup? Because everyone's going to be talking about, well, you trade Foles in the offseason, you know, blah, blah.
You let Minshew get you to the playoffs and then play Foles in the playoffs.
True. But like 2020, can they keep him as a backup?
Do you really want that to be your quarterback situation, or do you want to be...
You're the guy who's like professionalism that doesn't matter about their feelings.
Oh, no. I'm more saying I think my investment would be maybe more like Minshew and draft somebody. Hmm. Minshew and continue to draft and try to flip Foles.
I mean, yeah, but that's... So what Foles does give you is, you know, you're back to being the league's best backup situation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not worried about feelings as far as that goes.
I think there's value in having a really good backup quarterback.
Sure.
Particularly as Foles has already shown in the past, i.e., you know, one that's capable of going on a run and winning a Super Bowl.
Good locker room guy, all that stuff. Got the respect of his teammates.
And combined, their salary cap situation is actually pretty cheap for a quarterback. Yeah. So I'd be tempted to keep Nick Foles around as a backup.
I really want Nick Foles to play more football because, as I said, coming into the season, I need more Nick Foles data points.
Yeah.
We haven't had all that many full seasons of Nick Foles with a consistent supporting cast that you can kind of like glean insights from. He has been on the both ends of the spectrum, you know, extreme ends. I told you he had 2 games during that 2017 run that he graded at 32.
Mm-hmm.
2 of them.
That's like worse than Trubisky.
In a Super Bowl winning year. That's what he just graded at last week when he was terrible in the first half. Fumbles and picks and all that stuff. He had 2 games like that. At the end of the 2017 season, it makes no sense that he would actually go on that run and grade at 92 or 93 and just dominate the NFC Championship.
We accept it because it happened, but that run is one of the most improbable things that's ever happened in the NFL.
We were making jokes at that point. We said, who is the best? Because where was Teddy at that point? Oh, so in the NFC Championship game, we said, who are the best quarterbacks in the NFC Championship? And at the time, Case Keenum was playing well. Sam Bradford and Teddy Bridgewater were on the roster in Minnesota.
It's like the Vikings might have the 3 best quarterbacks in this game.
We were making jokes. LOL. Ha ha ha. That's what's happening because Foles was playing so poorly and his divisional game against the Falcons actually wasn't that good.
Hmm.
Fired a pass to a safety that got bounced back to a receiver, which was hilarious. We thought he was the 4th best quarterback in the NFC Championship.
And he goes out there, grades at 9.
Egg on our face. He was awesome.
Yeah.
For 2 straight weeks.
Like I say, that is one of the most improbable things that's ever happened in the NFL. And we just take it for granted that he was just able to do it.
Okay.
But Foles is capable of, you know, being either end of the insane spectrum.
Yep. So we're taking, a lot of us taking the Jags.
Yeah.
Do you want to say anything about the Chargers?
Philip Rivers started the season terribly, or started the game terribly last week. Then actually played reasonably. But we've reached that point where every time he does anything bad, whoever is running the... Who's ever the director for Fox, CBS, or whoever it is, I haven't checked, is...
Found Tyrod.
Yeah, he's got a camera on Tyrod all times.
Stop. The camera should be on Derwin James at all times. That's who I'll be watching.
Is he back this week?
He was back last week.
Oh, last week?
Okay. Yeah. So, yes. Still back.
Mm-hmm. Still back.
All right. We're taking the Jags. Titans at the Oakland Raiders. What are you watching for in this one?
Josh Jacobs. And Derrick Henry. I don't care that running backs don't matter because those are the only things that are interesting.
No, this will
be
fun.
Josh Jacobs has broken 61 tackles on 218 carries, I think, which is
what he does.
An insane rate. And apparently he's had a broken shoulder since week 7.
Really?
Yeah. Fracture in his shoulder. I'm no doctor, but is that the kind of thing you should be playing through?
Depends on how broken. What I would do, I would sit. So Josh Jacobs is on my fantasy team. So I would sit him this week because little fantasy advice for everybody. This is free. You don't have to go to Jeff Ratcliffe for this advice. If you're going to play in a fantasy league, make sure you dominate the regular season so much that you have a bye in the playoffs. Like
this is like the blueprint to beating the Patriots.
This is the blueprint. This is the blueprint to winning fantasy football. The first step
be better than everybody else
is to have such a good team, be better than everybody during the regular season that you have a bye. Mm. So I'm sitting here just rooting for Josh Jacobs and my guys to not get hurt.
Okay. Yeah.
Because we got some real football to play next week, week 15.
Yeah. No.
In reality here though, this is great. This is Ryan Tannehill, Derek Carr. More Ryan Tannehill data points, just like I'm asking for with Nick Foles.
Making himself some money.
Is he making himself some money? Like, it's just like we're still in small sample size worlds. Is this, do you create this narrative that it's like, oh, new scheme, new system, new everything, right? You got a second opportunity at life. Now you're good. Or we're like, we're only six games into this thing. Let's relax here.
Well, I think
for a minute.
It can be both, right? I think he's definitely, it's six games, so anything could happen. On the other hand, you're not going to get that many more games, so he is going to make himself a ton of money. Because, like, if you're the Titans,
I mean,
can't let him go.
He has four more games. He's got four more opportunities here.
Yeah. But so if you're the Tennessee Titans, right, you've just dumped Marcus Mariota. There's no way you're re-upping him. You're not going to be picking high enough in the draft to snag one of the best quarterbacks there. So you can't let Ryan Tannehill walk out of the building.
Franchise, draft somebody.
Right. Like, unless he absolutely stinks the last four games of the season, you can't let him walk. At which point, the very minimum he's getting is a franchise quarterback tag.
The interesting thing about Tannehill, he always showed really well in our accuracy stuff. As far as, like, actual ball location, putting it on guys, especially at the short and intermediate level, he's been fantastic. This year, a little bit better downfield than he has been in the past. But he also had that, similar to Aaron Rodgers, you know, took too many sacks and had these negative plays mixed in there that just, you know, made him inefficient. And then similar to Kirk Cousins and Bradford and Dalton and these guys that I think he's been in like that, their tier of quarterback through the years, something was missing. Whether it's, you know, red zone, fourth quarter, something has always been missing with Tannehill. This year, it's been fantastic. Fourth quarter, huge plays, whether it's running the ball, throwing the ball. He's done so many things extremely well. So I can't wait to see if he can keep it going. And then with Derek Carr, I just want to see him be more aggressive. I've said this for a while now. This feels like one of those games. Remember last year, Oakland did this against Pittsburgh. We were sitting in here like, man, Derek Carr's throwing it down the field and he's making great throws. And this feels like one of those games where Derek Carr comes out chucking it. It's against a hot Tennessee team. I'm taking Oakland because of it. I think Carr bounces back and has a nice huge game because it's not going to be under 40 degrees. That's a big part of it today. Can't play in the cold, you know?
Adoree Jackson busted up, so that'll help if he's planning on airing it out.
Yeah. I'm taking Oakland. I'm the only one.
Yeah.
Solomon's taking
Oakland. I know. Yeah, Solly.
Bruce taking Tennessee. He always takes Oakland. Come on, Bruce.
Burned too many times.
Wrong. Pittsburgh Steelers at the Arizona Cardinals. We have a little Super Bowl rematch here, Sam. From 11 years
Kurt
ago.
Kurt Warner against Ben Roethlisberger.
That's what we're looking forward to here.
Kurt Warner, James Harrison again.
Instead of it's Kyler versus Duck.
A Duck. Duck the gunslinger, as he said today. He's a gunslinger, always has been.
Oh, he was gunslinging it the other day. He showed great touch. He had three big-time throws. He was throwing some nice touch passes the other day. He was not gunslingery in that first start against the Chargers until he threw the late pick.
How do you keep throwing the pan on the floor?
Look, when you're here for 2 hours, at some point you're going to start dropping stuff. This is live TV, folks. Oh, gosh.
The thing that I'm interested in is, can the Cardinals offensive line hold up at all against this Pittsburgh defensive front, which is one of the best in the NFL? They, you know, we've talked a lot about them, I think, this season. They've added the edge rush to the interior guys that they've had for so long. TJ Watt has been one of the better pass rushers in the NFL this season. Bud Dupree, mostly good. And, you know, Cameron Hayward and the guys inside still get a ton of pressure. So they're going to get a lot of heat. And Arizona's offensive line is not great.
Yeah, I'll be watching for the same thing. Javon Hargrave, they've got four guys in the top 20 at their respective positions between, you know, Hargrave, Hayward, Dupree, and Watt.
Mm-hmm.
Just guys that get after the quarterback.
and play the run. So definitely something to keep an eye on there. I want to see how Kyler bounces back. That was just horrendous last week against the Rams.
Yeah, miserable.
So this should be a good, this will be a good game to watch. Kyler at home against the Steelers defense. And the Steelers D just has to continue to prove it to me, because I they're better than they've been in previous years, but we've always kind of pigeonholed them as the team that when they face a good offense, they're not going to do it. They've sustained this pretty well this year, though.
I think they have a big advantage here, though, because of that pass rush versus the offensive line. So I think they're going to stop this Cardinals offense pretty successfully. Then the question is, the thing that could completely flip that, though, is turnovers. So if Duck the Gunslinger goes out there and tosses the Cardinals a couple of picks,
don't be too gunslingery.
Suddenly they're right back in this.
Kyler Murray has been charged directly with 19 sacks.
Whoa.
So when we charge a quarterback with a sack, it's either you held the ball longer than the concept.
Is that already a record? That's got to be.
I think
there,
it might. I haven't looked it up, but it's. I don't think I've seen too many guys above. I think last year, Dak had 15.
I don't remember a quarterback ever being 20 or above.
I don't either. So it's either you held the ball too long in a clean pocket, or you scrambled out of a clean pocket into a sack, or you could have thrown it away. And there was like, it was just, you have a clear option to not get sacked essentially. And you do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Kyler with 19. Second most is Trubisky with 14. So it's a huge difference. So that, you know, Kyler's got to get rid of the ball, and he's got to avoid those negative plays. All that said, he's still picking up, you know, 20, 30, 40 yards with his legs, you know, and that, you know, makes up for some of that.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the ability to offset some of that pass rush by, you know, making some plays.
I'm going with Pittsburgh in this one, though.
Same.
I don't know if I'm overrating what I saw last week from Arizona, but I don't feel great about it. But I'm going with Pittsburgh. Seattle Seahawks at the Los Angeles Rams. It's a Sunday night football matchup. The boss will be there. Which Rams team are we going to get here, Sam?
That's the question. They've in recent weeks been kind of either way.
Yeah.
They got annihilated by the Ravens, absolutely curb stomped. But they also completely throttled the Cardinals. Now, we've just been talking about the Cardinals as not being particularly good, so that's part of that conundrum. But it is a kind of interesting dynamic, because this defense is capable of playing really well. The Seahawks, you know, Russell Wilson is still playing at this MVP level, but they've got their own problems. Like, their pass rush, or pass protection rather, is not good. Seattle versus Los Angeles is typically where Aaron Donald has monster games, because, you know, the Seahawks just don't have good offensive linemen. Not only do they not have good offensive linemen, they have a particular style of offensive linemen, i.e. great hulking, lumbering tree stumps that just do not match up well with Aaron Donald. So that's always a factor in this game. Plus, I think Tyler Lockett had the flu on Monday or something, and he's, you know, is he going to be 100%?
You're all over those. That's great.
Flu game for Lockett.
Did my hour quarterback rankings this week. Jared Goff lands at 19 so far in the grades. He's in that Jameis-y type of level of volatility right now. 10th highest percentage of turnover worthy plays, but he's also number 10 in big time throws. So Goff, we've seen him, you know, both ends of the spectrum. Last week made a number of nice throws, had that perfect end zone throw sideline, you know, right along the sideline. Robert Woods was uncoverable. There was a crispness to that offense last week that we hadn't seen, I don't think, since last year.
So Jameis Winston is cesium, like the most volatile quarterback in the NFL. Goff is more like a sodium, more like, you know, low level volatility.
All right, until you draw it all out for me, I won't.
We need to get somebody on, you know, creating the quarterback periodic table.
We have some very astute listeners here that have created some creative things through the years.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone wants to get to it before I do, go for it.
How about this? Free subscription?
Okay. If somebody creates a periodic table of volatile quarterbacks, all the quarterbacks in their appropriate spot in, you know, fine periodic edge table imagery, I'll give, free edge subscription.
Free PFF edge if we get a periodic table with some thought that we agree with. We have
something
to agree with
that we can throw up on the board behind us. Yeah. When we talk about it, we can throw it up there.
Because Goff is some kind of element, and he's a volatile one. So far this year.
Pretty sure it's sodium. We'll give him a sodium.
Russell Wilson. Let's talk about MVP for a second. Everybody loves MVP talks, except for you.
Yeah.
The boss, Chris, went on NFL Network this week. He said it's Russell Wilson. He's got the highest PFF grade, and because of volume, his wins above replacement will be the highest.
Yeah.
As far as, so if we were voting for MVP, it'd be Russell Wilson. I said I'd give him my vote even after that Eagles game a couple weeks ago because he had five big time throws, three of which fell incomplete. If we're talking about what the player does and adds to his team's chances to win, I know Lamar's right there with him, but man, I think Russell Wilson is the guy right now.
This is why I hate this award.
Oh, okay. So I'm just talking to myself.
Because so it's all intangible crap. Because you've got Russell Wilson, whose team are actively trying to take the ball out of his hands, right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, you've got Lamar Jackson, who is the sole reason that offense exists in its current form.
Yeah, I would say there is some I would admit that.
How do you quantify that?
I think there's some unquantifiable stuff
right
that Lamar's bringing to the table.
You cannot quantify that, at which point the entire award becomes people just going, well, I would vote for this because I think it's really valuable.
Well, they look
at
stats.
I would vote for that because I think that's really valuable.
They generally look at stats.
Ridiculous.
My fear with Russell Wilson is we still haven't seen that real dud of a game. You know, he just throws the ball in harm's way. And he still sometimes makes that fourth quarter comeback.
Right. Which might not happen, but it has might every other year.
Right. And it's kind of like, I use the Stafford example. Stafford's going to have those four elite games that you have. You know, I always wait for these things that have, trended through the years. It might not happen, but I'm always a little fearful of it. It's generally a road game. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get from Russell. Outside of the Rams getting destroyed by the Ravens on Monday Night Football, the defense has played excellent the last 7-8 weeks. Is this the game? I'm always a little fearful of that. That's why I'm going with the Rams. I'm buying into the Rams turning a corner last week. The offense looking crisp, the defense playing great over the last 7 or 8 weeks outside of one game against the Ravens. I'm buying into the Rams this week on Sunday Night Football.
I can definitely see a scenario in which that happens. I just have seen too much bad from the Rams to buy into them so far. By the way, confirmed that 19 sacks charged to Kyler Murray is a record since 2006. It's in fact already four more than any other year. 15 was
the
previous
record. You just went through all that?
I did.
Who's got the record? Is that Dak last year?
Dak last year, Tyrod in 2017 had 15. I think somebody else had 15 somewhere down the line there as well. But 15 was the previous record held by a few different people. And yeah, now he's got 19 already with, what, four games left?
Yeah, not great. So you're taking Seattle, I'm taking the Rams. That's the other one where we differ. Let's wrap it up. Monday Night Football, the New York Fighting Eli Giants.
This is one of the most miserable Monday Night Football games.
I wanted to see Daniel Jones.
Yeah, well, you can't because you're going to get Eli instead. You're going to get Daniel Jones 1.0.
1.0.
Yeah, that's a shame. So we're going to get Eli. Eli against the Eagles on Monday Night Football.
Daniel Jones has the second most turnover-worthy plays in the NFL. Will he still be second by the end of the weekend?
No, because Kyle Allen.
Kyle Allen's right behind him.
Something. He's going to throw one. At least.
We have Jones with 16 big-time throws and 27 turnovers.
Whoever is listening in terms of your periodic table creation, Jameis is cesium, whatever the next one down, potassium, that's Daniel. Whoever the hell we were just talking about.
What's the best element of all time? What's the GOAT element that Brady gets?
The best. Well, everything is a carbon, life forms are carbon-based, right?
So Brady is the life.
Got to be pretty
TB12 is life.
Well, so carbon, life forms are carbon-based. People breathe oxygen. That's quite important.
Either one world, kind of getting old.
The universe is based on hydrogen, right?
Anything, any of those elements getting old and regressing a little bit?
It's hard to tell.
We're losing oxygen left and right.
We're losing audience members right now is what we're doing.
All right. Well, we're talking about Monday Night Football. That's what's losing people.
Oh, okay.
Carson Wentz. Last week, just speaking of volatility, just so many ups and downs over the last few weeks. Since week 7, 30th ranked quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, he's been playing bad.
And this is kind of like the cyclical nature of the season, right? He was playing better than the stats showed for a while. And this was kind of like what we said with the Cousins thing. when Cousins wasn't playing well and his stats are still pretty good, it's like, dude, he's going to play better and his stats will match it and he'll be better. Poor Carson Wentz didn't have the stats when he was playing well. Then he started playing horribly. So his statistical season never, you know, doesn't look that good. He's battling through all sorts of receiver issues, injuries, releases. He's been playing with all sorts of different people.
Aguilar
looked pretty good last week.
Made some plays.
Jeffrey made some plays. Just so much inconsistency there. My boy Matt Collins got released.
He did.
I liked Matt Collins as a deep threat only coming out of UNC with Trubisky.
Didn't go so well.
I see you researching there.
Hmm.
Anyway, anything else you're looking for in this game?
No.
Eli is exactly 500 as a starter if you're into QB.
Right, so four games left. Could potentially end his career 118 and 118. Or could end up with a losing career record. Which, frankly, wherever you are on the spectrum, would definitely be a kick to the stones of the Eli for Hall of Fame debate.
Geez.
I'm just saying, if you're one of those people that wants to be Eli for the Hall of Fame, that becomes a harder argument when you look at his lifetime losing record.
I took a break from Thanksgiving dinner. I saw the Frank Gore image that was up there about all his rushing yards.
Yeah, I had Barry Sanders.
Yeah, with like 100 extra games.
Yeah.
So I was like, put Frank and Eli in the hall of very durable or did it a long time. Or
along with Curtis Martin.
Whatever. Man, some people are like really angry about that though too.
So there's a group of people that inherently value durability.
No, but so like with the Eli argument, it's easy because it's like, why? Because you say, why is Eli in the Hall of Fame? Okay, he's got these two big Super Bowl wins and two runs. That,
to me, his entire argument is he was a key component in those two runs, which were two of the greatest Super Bowl runs and victories of all time.
It happened to be against the Patriots.
And if he did nothing else for his entire career but did those, I would have time for the argument that says he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
That means if Nick Foles went on a Super Bowl run this year,
yes,
you'd consider him?
Yes. My problem with it is people want to be like, well, plus he hung around for 15 years playing average either side of that.
Well, because that's the entire Frank Gore.
I don't care about that. I care only about the notable things that he did on the Super Bowl run. The fact that he just happened, like those two runs bought him the 10 years of playing like crap. Like Joe Flacco was playing this year and the last time he was halfway decent was 08. Like you are bought a decade's worth of average to crappy play by one of those Super Bowl runs. He went on two of them. Consequently, we're stuck with the guy for the next decade. So, like, the fact that he was hanging around for so long is of no, like, interest to me whatsoever. It's just those two runs.
And then Monday Night Football against the Eagles. Eli gets a chance to add to his Hall of Fame-ish resume. Tune in. I'm taking the Eagles in this one.
I'm taking the early bedtime.
That's it, guys. That's it. Week 14 preview is in the books. Special thanks to all of our sponsors, Western and Southern. Of course, Proper Cloth. Be sure to get to propercloth.com/PFF today. Use PFF20 for your $20 off.
Mm.
And then Cyber 40. Go get your PFF annual products 40% off because the promo code's going away in the next 24 hours at some point. So Cyber 40.
Sometime.
Go check it out at PFF.com. We'll see you guys Monday morning as we recap all of week 14.
Mm-hmm.
All right, enjoy the football.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.